Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now coming up on the show, we talk to Alistair MacLeod of GoldMoney.com. But first, Scottish-American industrialist Andrew Carnegie, one of the richest men in history, with the equivalent of over $370 billion in today's dollars, once said, "I would as soon leave my son a curse as the almighty dollar." Indeed, Carnegie did give away much of his vast fortune, but much of it was toward the cause of peace, his legacy. Little did he see that it was the almighty dollar that might one day have so much to do with destroying all that peace he had given his dollars toward achieving. Ironic, isn't it? He might as well have given it to his son as to the cause of peace. Stacy?
Yes, and this is in honor of our upcoming guest, of course, because we're all Scottish-American here. And I'm talking about this headline regarding the almighty dollar because, of course, while Carnegie was alive, we were on a gold standard domestically, and then we got rid of that, and we only had the international gold standard. And then we got rid of that in 1971, and we've had basically the U.S. petrodollar standard. And is that falling apart? Well, a court headline reads, "China is reportedly taking a major step towards making yuan the new global currency." And this is because China last year surpassed the United States as the largest consumer of oil. And now they have their own oil futures contract based in yuan, which started trading last Monday. And in the first 3 days of trading, there were 151,804 contracts traded with a turnover of 65 billion yuan in value. So this is the first contracts listed there. Some people are saying, ooh, this could kick off the petrodollar off of the global standard, and it's going to be the petro yuan.
Oh, yeah. Well, the second I read that headline, you know, one name popped into my mind, Alistair MacLeod, because he's actually been predicting this for a while, and he understands the geopolitics and the finance, a rare individual that he is to understand all these dimensions. And now it's here. So we must talk to Alistair and get his take on this and see what it portends. Alistair, welcome.
Hello, Max. Thank you for all your very kind comments.
What does this mean? You are the man who has been talking about this for a while. So walk us through what you think this means.
Quite simply, China wants to be independent of the dollar because she has seen how America in the past uses the mighty dollar to attack those that she regards as her enemies. So it does actually make a lot of sense from China's point of view not to use dollars. And the introduction of this contract, this oil contract, which is available to both domestic users and also international users, is the first step in that direction. And I would say that it's going to be the first of many steps because she is sure to start issuing contracts in yuan for all the major commodities, marketable commodities that she buys from around the world.
Right. So there is two sides to this, as again, you've been written about, and you've got an excellent piece on the goldmoney.com website delving into this. So the China is, of course, they have to ease their way into this because of the quid pro quo that exists between the two countries and the trade that goes on there. You suggest in your piece that they will, to avoid an outright dollar collapse, they will try to manage the situation. What do you see will be the story there?
Well, it's very much in China's interest to manage the situation because the last thing she wants to do is to create havoc in the global economy by threatening the dollar's position as the reserve currency. That would go completely against not only her interests, and remember also that she's a very large owner of dollars and US treasuries, but it also is not her style. Her style really is to control things as much as possible. So she doesn't like doing things where a loss of control is a likely consequence. And I think that explains why she has been so slow in introducing this contract. It's been in the planning stage for, the first I heard of it, I think, was back in 2014. And I think it was even discussed before then. And I think they even tried to introduce something some time ago, which was a failure. But this contract is not a failure. The average turnover is a bit under 60,000 lots for each of the 5 days traded so far. And that represents, in effect, 60 million barrels of oil per day in very round figures. Now, that compares with her imports, which are currently running at about 8 to 8.5. So given that the earliest futures date is September, you can see that there's going to be enough time, I think, for this market to really have genuine liquidity so that it can be used by countries such as Iran, Russia, and so on, taking yuan in payment for oil.
Okay, so Alistair, in economics, there is a tried and true concept that forms the bedrock of some of the issues that you are mentioning here. It's the Triffin dilemma. It relates to central banks. It relates to the having a world reserve currency. The US dollar is currently the world reserve currency. It gives them some advantages, but it sets them up for a fatal flaw at a certain, let's call it equilibrium point, and I'll let you get into the details here. But this is, if you read textbooks and you know economics, you can see what will unfold as this shift away from the dollar takes place. So the Triffin dilemma, tell us a little bit about it and tell us that at some point how it blows up.
Yes, sure. Well, a Belgian-American economist called Robert Triffin, who held that the country which issues a reserve currency has to run trade deficits to ensure that there's enough reserve currency for everybody to use it and it for it to act as reserve currency. Now, of course, this is something that people tell me all the time. The bulls of the dollar say that, look, there's always going to be demand for the dollar because it is the reserve currency. If you're going to buy oil, you need to buy the dollars first in order to pay for the oil and all this sort of stuff. Now, that is undoubtedly true. But what you're doing is you're creating an overvalued currency because you have to run your economy on a trade deficit basis in order to export the currency for it to be used as a reserve currency. So by definition, you've got a sort of short-term benefit in the sense that you're overvaluing your currency, but at some stage in the future, the whole thing starts going wrong. And there are three ways broadly where this can happen. The first is if you've exported enough currency for there to be no longer more reserve currency to be needed for the purposes of international trade. The second thing that can happen is if you have a global recession and that impacts on trade and trade contracts, then obviously you're going to have a surplus of currency and its value is going to fall. And the third thing that can happen is something that is beginning to happen with China, and that is if the reserve currency starts being replaced by another currency, either as a reserve currency or a currency which is preferred by the users, such as the yuan, then that again is something that can lead to a fall in the currency. Now, the fall in the currency can actually be very, very severe. And the last time we had a Triffin event, if I can call it that, was in the late 1960s through to the early 70s. And that basically came about because there were so many dollars in foreign hands, in foreign ownership, that when the Vietnam War slowed down, all those sort of things started to come to an end. These dollars tried to get back home, and the result was that central banks started redeeming dollars for gold, and there was effectively a run on the US Treasury's gold stock. So that was the last time we had this event, and they set up a London gold pool to try and stop it. That failed. They then tried to revalue it from $35 to $42.22. That failed. And then Nixon just gave up on the Bretton Woods Agreement entirely. So you could see that the last downside to this Triffin dilemma was a very major event. This time, I'm not saying that it's entirely China's fault, but what she has done is she has threatened the status of the petrodollar. That is a situation that's going to evolve into the other markets. Meanwhile, the amount of dollars held in foreign hands is absolutely enormous because of the amount of currency that was produced by the Fed in the great financial crisis. That is still overhanging the market. And then finally, if you really want to gild this nasty lily, you have President Trump, who is determined to increase the budget deficit, which in turn leads to an increase in the trade deficit, so that you can see that, yet more dollars are going to be exported by America as part of her exorbitant privilege, if you like. So everything is beginning. I can see that everything is beginning to work in such a way that the dollar is going to have another nasty crisis replicating what happened over 40 years ago.
Okay, so to quote from your recent piece, quote, the nettle that China must grasp is that her mercantilist plans for the Asian continent are leading to the decline of American influence. There comes a point where she cannot pursue her own objectives without undermining the dollar. And with the introduction of the yuan-settled oil future, that Rubicon has now been crossed. So just to emphasize the point here, Alistair, you are suggesting that the introduction of this yuan-settled oil futures contract is in fact a Rubicon that has been crossed, where China is now embarking on a post-US dollar reserve currency status, and we're entering a whole new 21st century world order. Is that too much of a statement? What do you think?
I don't think that's too much of a statement. Obviously, at some stage in the future, we will look back in time to see whether the statement is true. But it seems to me that if you analyze the thing through, yes, this is a very important event, and it is, in that sense, a Rubicon.
I also want to ask you a question, because in your article and here you point out that China themselves don't want to present this Triffin dilemma to their own economic and monetary policy. They don't want necessarily a reserve currency. They don't want the yuan to be a reserve currency. And one of the items in the Quartz article that I read at the top of the show was they showed that the share of SWIFT per currency in the top five currencies, number five being the yuan, and the US dollar is indeed their share of the currency in global trade has declined from 2015, when it was 43.9%, down to 39.8% in 2017. The euro increased from 2015 from 29.4% up to 35.7%. But surprisingly, the yuan actually decreased. It was only 2.3% of trade in 2015, and is now down to 1.6%. How do you account for that? And what does that suggest in terms of reserve currency status?
Well, firstly, the one thing I would make clear is that I just do not believe that China wants the yuan to become a reserve currency. All she wants to achieve is that she is buying, if you like, commodities, including energy, from foreign suppliers and paying for it in her own currency. Now, she doesn't mind if they hedge that into other currencies. She doesn't mind if, as part of the contract, other currencies are used as margin deposit. All that is absolutely fine. But what she doesn't want is a situation where, as I described before, her net trade is reflected in the balances through the correspondent banking system in the banks in New York, because that gives America a theoretical control over China's trade. That's what she's really trying to avoid. As to the small proportion of yuan used in trade settlement, I think that the main reason for that is that until now, she has operated a very strict divide between domestic yuan and international yuan. And I think one of the big points about this contract, which I didn't mention in the article, but it is implied, if you like, is that that barrier is now to an extent broken. If you're, if you're a large trader, if you're licensed and all the rest of it, you can actually now trade on this exchange in yuan, as whether you are resident in China, or domestic yuan, or whether it's international. So I think that the capital restrictions between domestic and international yuan, I think those are being eroded as part of this process. And indeed, I think that's something that's going to have to continue. But once that happens, then I think the proportion of yuan that you will see in global trade settlement is actually going to increase. And I think, coming back to your point, Stacey, I would say that the numbers that you quoted for the low level of trade settlement in yuan is because they have this split between domestic and international.
Right. And let me just wrap up with a quote you have in your piece here. The initial source of the dollar's decline measured in gold seems likely to be an acceleration of central bank demand for physical metal from oil exporting nations dealing with China. So at the end of the day, as the dollar has a bad day, and due to all this we've been talking about, it's a huge benefit to gold. And so we have about 10 seconds. Are you on? Obviously, you're on that page as well.
Yes, absolutely. What the local exchanges have done is they're setting up a gold corridor in Southeast Asia so that they can pool the resources. You've got gold yuan contracts in Dubai and also in Hong Kong. They're going to be working together. There is storage facilities in a free trade zone on the mainland. That is already planned. It'll be up and running in a couple of months' time, so that you can see that they are increasing the amount of gold available for those that want to come out of a yuan oil contract and go into a yuan gold contract. And that principally would be countries like Iran.
All right, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Alistair MacLeod of GoldMoney.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.